Backseat Producers, Episode 154, Inception. Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Daryl.
And this is David.
We are the Backseat Producers.
And tonight's mind-bending episode is...
Inception.
Next week.
Next week is...
The Men Who Stare at Goats.
The Men Who Stare at Goats. And the week after
have
that...
Have you seen it
yet? Something totally different. Operation Mindcrime.
Have you seen Men Who Stare at Goats yet?
I started watching it. I have not watched
it's
it
It's streaming,
yet.
Which is nice.
I know. I
that
know.
It is very nice.
That's how I started watching it. Mm. Actually, it's also on Stars On Demand. So you don't even need to stream it if you have cable with On Demand.
I do not. Wait. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, you do. If you have Stars in your package, then you have that.
Let's check my charter list.
Is that the place that does
do you have Stars in your package?
I have many.
Sounds painful.
However, I don't know if I have it in my cable pack. You know what? I have all the movie channels, I'm sure.
Then you do have it. Because I don't have HBO.
And the Playboy channel. Not because I watched the Playboy channel, but because I looked at the list and I'm like, you know what? I'm an adult now. I can get the Playboy channel. Booyah! And every time I turn it on, I'm like, this just depresses me. So I turn it off.
Art Man Presents is better.
Art Man Presents is probably better.
I've never seen the Playboy channel, so I really wouldn't know.
It's a lot of naked chicks. It's kind of exactly what you'd expect.
Mm, sounds delicious.
It's mostly soft core. That wasn't
a
judgment.
That's like going to a strip club. Take that for what you will.
Or watching art.
My life is a strip club.
Okay.
As seedy and smoky as it can get.
Not in Illinois.
Not in Illinois, though.
Sounds like the van I drive.
The bang bus?
No, the company bus. The helpful, company van.
The helpful bus?
The Helpful Bus.
The Helpful Bus. Have you seen The Helpful Bus?
The Helpful Bus is worth seeing.
All right.
We gave those bitches a ride!
Didn't your mom tell you to respect people? All right. Don't get distracted by the chat room.
I'm not going to get distracted by the chat
I saw
room.
You getting distracted.
I might get distracted by the chat room.
You're already distracted.
I'm drinking Ouzo.
You're trying not
from
to.
From the bottle.
I know. You're trying not to talk about it, but...
Take off my glasses. That way I can see the chat room. All right, so, Inception. I'm wondering if we can do spoilers or if we even should do spoilers.
This is a pretty linear movie.
Yeah.
The spoilers come at the end.
as much as you can get linear with the movie. The
movie's pretty linear.
All right, let's put it this way. We get too close to the end of their story, we can do a spoiler alert. And if they want to stick around and listen to our interpretation of the end...
Here's the thing. We're probably going to blur the line of what people consider spoilers with this movie because it's difficult to tell...
Right.
Where the spoilers begin
and end.
Truth.
So, if you have not yet seen the movie, just don't even listen.
Or listen to the next couple of minutes, because we'll talk about acting.
We'll do summary. Once we start the plot synopsis, stop listening.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so what'd you think?
I loved it.
Best one I've seen so far. I mean, it a real hybrid of a movie.
I thought it was fantastic.
Christopher Nolan grabbed me. And started stroking and did not stop until I was finished.
I thought...
Then he didn't talk to me afterwards, which was a double win.
One of the things that I was curious about is everybody thought it was a really complicated... I've heard...
Yes!
I've heard complaints?
Yeah. It's hard to follow.
It's hard to follow. It's complicated. And It was surprising.
I think that happens.
None of those things were true for me. There was nothing surprising at all about the movie. It was not hard to follow. It was complicated.
Right.
But it wasn't that hard to follow.
Especially towards the end when all the stuff starts happening really fast.
True, but they actually gave you a lot.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of visual cues. Yes. There's a lot of visual cues so you can keep straight what's going on.
In fact, one of my complaints with the movie is so much exposition. Like, the people who complain about it being complex, it's like, they explain everything in laborious detail. How can you be confused by this?
To the point where there's chunks of the movie where there, yeah, granted, there are jumps in time, but it's, we're going to give you a piece of exposition, then we're going to jump in time. To a point in time where we're giving you different and new exposition.
See, I think what the problem is that fans of sci-fi and fantasy go through these gyrations whenever they pick up a new sci-fi or fantasy series. Because the sci-fi or fantasy series has to go through a sequence of establishing the ground rules for that universe.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, that was the first half of the movie.
Yes.
These are the rules of the world. This is how this works. And it was almost like a sci-fi geek.
Right.
Because a sci-fi geek, you say, hey, there is warp technology. How does it work? What are the limitations? Because as soon as you establish your limitations, then your plot can go ahead and break the limitations, and then you've got a story.
Stretch the limitations, break the rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You only set up the rules so you can break them.
Well, also, you're trying to also set up the story a little bit for people who are not sci-fi geeks.
Right.
I mean, if you try to be that narrow an audience, you're gonna lose money left and right. So you got to have the average moviegoer be able to pick this up.
Right. So I looked over in the first half hour at Melina, and I'm like, she's going to hate this movie. Because it was just a bunch of talking. And I'm like, this is not the movie I thought was gonna get in the trailer. Then, like, minute 35, then started... Then shit was on. And I was like, oh, God. It's like...
We're past the story setup now.
Yeah, we did the training for the laser tag stuff, and now we're playing laser tag.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's do this.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly how it felt. When the mission began.
Yeah.
The beginning of the mission is really what kicked it off. So, acting.
Leonardo DiCaprio is awesome.
He is. I've liked Leonardo DiCaprio for a long, long time. Where I think I really first saw him, what he was capable of doing was when I saw Man in the Iron Mask.
That was good.
Because that was filmed right about the same time as, or slightly after, Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
And Titanic, I like Titanic. I think Titanic's a good movie. I enjoy it.
I thought Titanic was mediocre, but Romeo and Juliet was awesome.
Yes.
I've never seen Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, it's good. It's all modernized and stuff.
Yeah,
well,
you'll like Shakespeare if you watch this one.
I like Shakespeare anyway, but...
Well, you'll like it more.
But he owns it.
Yeah.
It was good.
But my first real... Okay, Leonardo DiCaprio's a good actor was in... Man in the Iron Mask. The dual role he played in that was fantastic.
Yep.
And I think he pulled it off well.
It wasn't cheesy.
Then you know, he did a number of movies, but I think the next one was The Aviator. When he did The Aviator.
I didn't see The Aviator.
We talked about it on the podcast, but before your time.
I was about to say, if we did, then I ended up having seen it.
It was Deuce and I. But... Yeah,
and Deuce have a love affair with Leonardo DiCaprio.
And Scorsese.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And for good reason.
Yeah, well, yeah. And I think the one thing that has helped Leonardo DiCaprio more than anything is his work with Martin Scorsese.
No disagreements.
He's made a number of great movies since then. Blood Diamond, The Departed.
Shutter Island.
Shutter Island.
I did not like Shutter Island, but it was a great movie.
Mm-hmm. And that's fair. I mean,
I can realize the difference.
I get no problem with that. There are great movies that I don't like.
Like your mom.
Booyah!
Yes. Set up. Knock down. All right.
You just said that because she hasn't given you beer lately.
Yes. That could be true. Harboring some, like, hidden angst. So the other people in the movie, Ken Watanabe, come on.
That guy's awesome.
He was great.
That guy's awesome in everything he does.
Yes.
The guy from Third Rock from the Sun.
Yes.
It took me 3/4 of the movie, and I'm like,
you didn't realize who that is?
No.
Tommy. It was Tommy.
I didn't watch. I was too young for that show. I was like 13 or 14 when that show was on. Well, I realize that's not too young. It's too young for me to look back and say, oh, I remember that show.
Yeah.
That's like out of the zone.
That was one of those shows that it took me about a half a season to realize the joke of the three main characters' names. Tommy, Dick, and Harry. Tom, Dick, and Harry.
I didn't even know what they were. So.
Anyway.
That guy was awesome. That guy was really awesome.
Yeah, and...
and Scarecrow.
Ellen Page.
Ellen Page.
Ellen Page, Juno. With the right director, she can do very well.
Yes.
And I think she did very well in this movie.
Yeah. I have no complaints with her. And Cillian Murphy, come on. He was a Scarecrow.
He was a Scarecrow. I thought he did a great part in this.
And I've seen his penis.
Tom Skerritt. Was it Tom Skerritt?
Tom Berenger.
Tom Berenger.
Tom Skerritt.
Tom Skerritt.
Thomas Skerritt?
Thomas Skerritt's the other cool guy, but he normally has a mustache.
Tom Berenger. Oh, man, that guy got fat.
He got big. He got puffy.
But yeah. He got old really puffy. Well.
But he does carry it well. And he acted his ass off in this movie.
A lot of these actors acted their ass off in this movie.
Yes.
Who is this man, and why does he look like he's about to explode?
From what I've been reading on some of the backgrounds on it is, there was a lot of physical action, a lot of physical work in this movie.
It looked like it.
Oh, yeah.
There was very little CGI. It was a lot of the effects were all practical effects.
Yeah, that's one thing I really want to see, like, some of the behind-the-scenes stuff on some of the effects. Like, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's, all of his work. Well, not just the fight scenes, but all the stuff he did in the hotel, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
But all that stuff he did in the hotel was really cool.
Yeah, well,
and that looked authentic. I mean, it looked like he was really doing that.
We'll get into that, but yes, that was authentic.
Yeah,
not a CGI effect.
I figured it was one of two things. It was either wire work or they were doing airdrops.
Nope, neither.
Really?
Neither. It was actually even more practical than that.
So, things you should not expect from this movie going into it. This is not a fight movie.
No.
I got into an argument with a guy at work who said, I expected more combat and was let down. And I'm like,
seriously?
Are you an idiot? He's like, well, yeah, and the special effects kind of sucked. And I was like, first off, the special effects didn't suck. Second off, the special effects was the story.
Yeah.
Douche.
Yeah. Like, the special effects was the reason for this movie in some cases.
Well, the thing is, though, the advertiser of this is a... It's billed as a sci-fi action movie.
Yeah, I know.
It's a hybrid.
Which is a travesty because it's not an action movie.
No, but there are some heavy action sequences toward the end.
Mm-hmm. I will disagree with that.
The James Bond-like action sequence at the end.
I realize that it is an action sequence, but I do not think that it's...
It doesn't make an action movie.
When we get there, it's an action sequence. You're right, but... It's difficult to talk
about. No, that's
fine. When we get there, we'll get there.
That's fine. That's fine.
Because there's also a big chase in the Muslim streets, but it's not...
No.
Okay.
I think we're on the same page. Don't worry about it.
Well, we'll talk about it.
All right. We will.
We'll talk about it, and then I want you to remember last week...
I know where you're going with this.
Okay. All right.
And it's fine.
All right.
I knew where you were going with it then.
All right. Do we have anything else to discuss before we move into the plots?
I don't think so.
Okay, this movie is going to be a nightmare to
sum up, yes.
To sum up.
Well, let's put it this way. It's a caper film wrapped in a lot of sci-fi trappings.
Oh, God, yeah. It's like watching three episodes of Leverage inside of each other.
Yes. Yes, it is. Kind of like watching that last episode of Leverage that aired, where the story kept changing.
Yeah, that was
based on who was telling it.
That was good.
All right, so,
so the movie opens.
Yeah,
in a Japanese estate, where Leonardo DiCaprio
is washed up on the beach.
Yeah, he washes up on the beach.
Oh crap! You're right. Doesn't even start there.
He washes up on the beach first.
Okay, so Leonardo DiCaprio washes up on a beach,
and he is basically tossed into a chair across the table from an old Japanese man. Who, looking at the old Japanese man, you can kind of tell that that's... I mean, they didn't do a lot to hide the fact that that's somebody in makeup looking old.
I didn't recognize him.
I didn't recognize him. Yeah. But I could tell that this was somebody who... That's not really how he looked.
I didn't recognize him then, but it's an old Asian man, and then an Asian dude showed up later, and I'm like, oh,
that's who that must be. Yeah.
And the fun thing he asked right off of him, rather strangely, have you come to kill me?
Yeah, have you come to kill me? Well, and he puts, they put the gun down and the top. There's a gun and a top that they put next to him, and he's just chowing on food. And he says, have you come to kill me? You remind me of someone from a long-lost dream. A long-lost dream.
And that's where our story starts to pick up.
Yeah, and then we move away from that, and...
Hold on a second. Hey, you two, you may actually want to go see this movie. Like, in all seriousness, you may not want to listen until you see the movie.
True.
There is a lot of stuff that won't make any sense until you've seen it.
Not only that, but you're going to ruin a great experience without having seen it before. Like, hearing it is going to be really lame compared to experiencing it.
Yes.
This is why movies are called movies. This is a very visual movie.
All right, well, Tallulah, when you see it and then you're like, I wish I didn't know what's going to happen. I want you to remember this moment. That's my new thing.
You've been warned.
That's my new thing. I want you to remember this moment right here.
It is your new thing. All right, so...
So anyway, have you come to kill me?
Yes.
So...
Yes, I have.
Is that what he says?
No, that's what he says.
All right, that's fine.
No, he's kind of... We later learn the guy's name is Dom Cobb, and he's basically there to try to steal some information out of this guy's.
Because we're still with the old man.
Right. Okay. Still with the
so
old man.
So the old man picks up the top. There's a top, the top next to the gun, and then he's like, oh, I remember this, and he spins it,
and it keeps going.
Then the scene ends. That scene ends, and then the next scene is them introducing themselves to someone else inside a Japanese...
The same house.
Estate.
Yeah, the same house. He's in the same house. But everyone is at... He's at a party, and they're all there more or less meeting each other, and we find out that he is there to try to steal some information out of this guy's safe.
Right. This is when the movie starts to get really brilliant.
Yes.
The visual cues in the movie, like if you're watching him and then his buddy, Tommy from Third Rock from the Sun, walk around, it is very obvious everybody else is just so generic that they just fade into the background.
Right.
It's brilliant. Like if they're not directly interacting with something, it almost fades away.
Right. And there's a surreal aspect to everything that's going on.
Yeah. And this will continue the entire movie.
Yeah, it's almost like they're in and what's really kind of cool is you can kind of tell there are certain aspects of the movie where it's influenced by James Bond. And this is one of the sequences that feels like it's kind of influenced by a Bond flick.
Yeah.
That they're on a mission, and they're spying, and you know, they come face-to-face with the guy that they're going to steal from, and there's some banter there.
And is he on to him or not?
Right.
And like you say, there's something not quite right with this scene.
Yes.
So there's something off. So Leonardo DiCaprio heads back to his room. And he starts tying the bed sheets together, obviously making some kind of rope thing so he can climb down the side of the house.
Right.
That's when Mal shows up.
Yes.
And yes, who is Mal?
Mal.
Mal.
It's Mal. It's M-A-L.
Well, anyway, this mysterious woman...
It's M-A-L. He just has a bad accent.
Yeah, he pronounces it Mal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, this mysterious woman shows up and acts like she knows him from way back.
Right.
And they have this.
They have an obvious history.
They have an obvious relationship of some kind, and this chick. There was something off about this chick. This chick is one of the best parts of the movie.
Yes.
This scene.
Who was that actress?
Oh, the actress?
She was, I don't remember. But anyway, so they have some discussion. He puts her in the chair, and then he ties the rope to it, and then he climbs out the window. Don't move. And he climbs out the window, and then he just falls.
She moved.
She moved. Damn it, she always moves.
Yeah.
So that plot was awesome.
Yeah, he climbs back up, gets into the room.
So he climbs down into the room that he was climbing down into.
Yeah.
It was the kitchen. Yeah. I think there's a guy there that he ends up killing.
Well, then he's sneaking around and he's whacking all the security guards trying to get to this guy's office where the supposed safe is at.
Silencer, run up, shoot the guy, catch him before he falls, ease him to the ground.
Yeah,
very I like that. It was very professional. This is someone who's done this before and knows what he's doing.
So now we're guess, okay, this guy is a trained assassin or he's a secret agent. So
right.
We're given this thing. Okay, this is either he's one of these two people. We're not obvious as what he's up to just yet.
Right.
Yeah.
So he breaks into the safe. He finds the information he's looking for.
Swaps out information.
Yeah. Swaps out with initially we don't know that until he takes it and changes it with the envelope he has. Right. And he's trying to read what the information is in that envelope. In walks Mal again. And hold on. She's working for the other side. And then things start to go to hell. The whole mission gets scrubbed, or at least is in jeopardy, and all the bullets start to fly.
And at this point, we start seeing flashes to reality.
Yeah,
because at this point, by the time this is actually happening, we've seen
we get a scene change and says, okay, hold on, they're all sitting in this sleazy little hotel room in the middle of a riot.
Was it when Tommy got killed?
You see the flash first, because the one guy starts to get really nervous about the time.
Right.
He turns on the headphones first.
Yes.
He turns on the headphones. Then
give him the audio cues. The audible
Tommy cue. Gets hit, but not killed. Leonardo DiCaprio shoots him in the head.
Yes.
So he's killed, and then Tommy wakes up in
the sleazy little hotel room.
Sleazy hotel room.
In the middle of the riot.
Right, because I think even Maul at some point says, if I kill him, he'll just go back.
Mm-hmm.
But
if I just injure him, he'll feel the pain.
Even in the dream, he'll still feel the pain, and she like shoots him in the leg or something.
Yeah. So, at this point, things start to fall apart, like literally.
Right, the world starts crumbling, imploding around them.
Yeah. So. Thus begins like a mini chase sequence where bullets are flying, and he kind of finally, as this whole mansion is crumbling in on itself, is frantically trying to read what's in this document. In the sleazy hotel, Tommy's like, yeah, we need to wake him up. So he's sitting in a chair above a bathtub full of water, and they kick him into the bathtub full of water.
Yeah.
And when he hits the water, in the dream, all the windows blow in, and it starts to flood.
Yeah. I thought that was very cool.
And he begins to wake up.
And then he begins to wake up. But Ken Watanabe has already woken up and is pissed.
Yes, he is.
Or he at least appears to be pissed.
He appears to be pissed. I don't know. He looked pretty pissed.
He looked pretty pissed.
Yeah. Well, everything is in that world that they're in. There is starting to implode too. The rioters are getting closer and closer. They're coming up the stairs, and Ken Watanabe, his character is Sato, starts to talk to them about, okay, you guys are pretty amateurish and everything else, and pretty much runs them down their whole operation.
Right.
And as they're kicking him to the curb. He's laying on the carpet. He says, "Okay, this room was in a dream I had." And he touches the carpet. And he says, "The carpet is the wrong pattern. It doesn't feel right."
It's his apartment,
right?
He's in what should be his apartment.
No, not his apartment. His meeting where he's meeting his mistress.
Well, right.
But he says this as he has his hand on the carpet. He says this carpet has the wrong pattern in it. It doesn't feel right. And suddenly all the rioters break in, and then boom, we find out it was another dream they were in.
Yes.
And this is where it starts to get kind of confusing. Is okay, dream within a dream.
Yeah.
Where does the reality start?
Yes.
On this.
Yeah.
So supposedly we're back into the real world.
And we're back in the real world.
Right. And we get some more depth of what these guys are all about. We find out they're essentially a bunch of dream thieves. They're specialized agents who specifically invade their target's dreams to pump out information that they're trying to find about them. They do it by setting up an elaborate dreamscape to which their victim interacts with them in.
At this point, the movie diverges from a straight shot action sequence to a long void of mm-hmm. exposition.
Right.
It's easier just to name off the things that we learned, to be honest.
We learned that his father is Michael Caine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's important.
Who sort of invented this dreaming technique.
Right. He is he is one of the best,
mm-hmm.
or was one of the best, and something has happened to him, and he isn't as good.
Not Michael Caine isn't one of the best.
Not Michael Caine, sorry. Bagham.
Okay. All right, Leonardo DiCaprio was one of
the
best.
He was an architect.
One of the guy who could build the dreams, and now he can't.
Right, and there's a problem where he can't.
There's some problem.
He goes to his dad and says, I need one of your students. I need the best.
Well, I thought it wasn't his dad. I thought it was Miles' dad.
Was it?
No, it was his dad.
No, I think it's his dad.
Well, let's back up just a bit. Before all this happens, we meet Sato again as they're trying to escape from Tokyo. And Sato tells them essentially that what they did to him was essentially he set up as an audition. And he wants to hire them for another job.
Well, he wants to hire them for another job, but Sato didn't set it up as an audition.
Yes, he did.
Somebody was trying to steal something from Sato, and they failed.
Right.
And that company is going to hunt them down and kill them because they failed.
That was Cobalt Engineering, yes.
Yes. Well,
so it may have also been in
Sato was using it as a test case to see if these guys were worth hiring.
Yeah, it may have also been that, but since they failed, this company is hunting them down.
Right.
So this is one of the brilliant things about this, right? So this Cobalt Engineering
mm-hmm.
is such a nameless, faceless evil that is chasing them for the rest of the movie that, like, every scene in the movie plays off common dream tropes.
Yep.
Which is brilliant. Nameless, faceless. There's something out there, and it's gonna get us.
It's gonna get me, and I can't go home.
And I can't go home.
And I have to get home to see my kids.
So,
as a parent, that's one of the that's a real hard big motivation. You know,
Escape from Tokyo, Snake Plissken. That's awesome.
I thought you were dead.
I thought you were taller. Works well for an Asian country. So,
well, now they've got a new mission, and they find out the mission is Sato wants to split up Cobalt Engineering, and the only way he can do this is to get to the younger heir.
I don't think it was Cobalt.
It wasn't Cobalt.
It was some other company.
It's not Cobalt.
There was some power conglomerate in China.
Well, anyway,
or Japan.
Yeah.
Well, no, it was in the United States. It was the Fishers, the elder Fisher and the younger Fisher, and he wants to plant the idea in the younger Fisher's head that he needs to split up the company.
Okay, that's fine.
To clear the path for Sato.
It was still some sort of global thing, but whatever. Right.
But anyway, they've got a new mission now, and now they've lost half their team.
Okay, so
now we go recruiting.
None of this matters because what we need to know is that there's something called Inception. And mm-hmm. the Inception, the difference between what they normally do, which is steal information, and Inception, is Inception, you place information or plant an idea into somebody's head. The idea being, if you get it within your subconscious, that will fully form, and you will accept it as an idea that you came up with, and it will change your outlook on life.
Nobody believes that this can be done without, you cannot implant an idea without the person knowing you implanted it and recognizing what you're doing.
Right.
Nobody believes this can be done except for Cobb, who says, I've done it.
Right.
There's no more explanation than that.
Exactly.
Which is great. So then they begin assembling their team. Michael Caine gives up Ellen Page.
Right.
As their new architect.
As a new architect. And he even throws out, he said, I want somebody as good as me. She's better than you were.
Which may or may not be true. I don't know.
Which, yeah, I mean, there's no...
We never see Cobb do
that's
it,
just
so.
That's just what Michael Caine says.
That's just an exposition line.
Yep.
Which I'm fine with. So then they go through the, let's establish the ground rules of dreaming.
Right.
So this is where they tell you that the rest of the movie could potentially be a dream.
They tell you everything could be.
That's the whole mission.
Yeah.
Because there's a scene where there's exposition going on with them sitting at a cafe, and he's explaining to her what's going on.
Right.
Turns out we're in the middle of a dream already.
Well, we're not. She doesn't know.
She doesn't know. He tells her.
We're in the middle of a dream. Are you sure? How did we get here?
Yeah.
I don't know.
How did you get here? You accept the fact that you are wherever you are, but you don't remember how you got there. Which is a dream trope. That happens.
That is a dream trope. Like when you wash up on a beach at the beginning of the movie. Right? You don't know how you got here, but you accept that you're here.
Right.
Let's roll with it.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, he gives her a quick demonstration of what can be done in the dream world. And this is where we start getting into some of our wilder visual effects.
I don't necessarily think it's a wilder visual effect.
We get a taste of them.
This is where she starts freaking out in the dream.
And things start exploding.
And the world starts breaking down around them. Mm-hmm. And things literally start exploding. The other thing we learn at the end of this sequence when they wake up is that time passes in the dream world at a different pace than it does
in the
real world. Mm-hmm. And it's...
And it they're adjusted.
Looking at it. They're looking at it at about a 12-to-1 at that point because they say 5 minutes passed... But an hour to them. So they're looking at it about a 12-to-1.
She starts messing with things, manipulating the way that physics work in the dream. Great. That's not interesting, really.
Visually, it is.
Visually, it's interesting. What's more interesting is that there are other people inside the dream who are just figments of the dreamer's subconscious.
Right.
And every time they start walking past people, people just turn, give this dead-eyed look at them. Yes.
Right.
It's creepy.
They're called projections.
Right.
It's creepy.
Yeah, and the fun thing is, the projections know that we're the dreamer. They tend to they fixate on it, and they know when somebody's trying to influence it. And we find out if you play with the dream too much, they will attack you.
Yeah, and he describes the projections as white blood cells.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The longer you're there, the more aggressive they become.
The longer you're there, and the more obvious you make yourself,
the more they notice you, and then eventually begin to act.
Right.
Yep.
They're just elements of the dreamer's subconscious.
So she starts messing around with something. The projections begin to attack her, and then Mal shows up and stabs her, and that was awesome.
And then he says, "Okay, where did she come from?" And then we find out some more about Mal.
Not quite yet. We get another taste from
Cobb about because she asked where did she come? She was not an ordinary projection.
Mm-hmm.
Because the projection knew her.
Yeah. So we'll come back to the whole Mal thing in a second. So they go to South America and pick up another random...
No, not South America. They went to Africa.
They went to Africa. They went to some country.
They met up with Youssef, their chemist.
They met up with Youssef, their chemist, and the other guy.
No, they met up with Youssef after they met up with the other guy, I thought.
Yeah, they meet up with it's like the same city. Yeah. So, I don't remember that guy's name.
He was good. He was a great actor.
Yeah, he was.
He
was fantastic.
He was
and
wonderful.
He was hilarious.
Yes.
Oh, that was Tom Hardy. He was in Aramis, the forger.
Yes, the forger.
Yes.
That's the guy.
There we go.
And very creative.
They meet up with that guy first, and allegedly Cobalt Company Incorporated business co is hunting down Leonardo DiCaprio. So there is a chase through the streets where he is just running, randomly running, and then at the end of it, he has to squeeze through this ridiculously small crevice.
Oh my god.
It was just like inching along sideways. Also, major dream tropes.
Yep.
And then he was saved by Ken Watanabe.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Just happens to show up and for a ride.
Just happens to show up.
I'm protecting my investment. Reasonable explanation.
You accept that you're here, but you don't know how you got there.
That's right.
So, then they go, they pick up Aramis, and they head over to the chemist's. The chemist is important because they need a drug that will put them under deeper and further, but will not paralyze their inner ears so they can do their kick drops.
Right.
And the kick drops are a change in, like, that sensation when you're falling.
Yeah, right.
That force you awake.
Yeah, I might explain what a kick is. A kick is something in the dream that will force you out of it, whether it's being injured or killed or some sort of sensation that triggers you to wake back up.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, we find out he's developed the sedative that allows your inner ear to continue to work. So the kick is going to be a falling sensation.
Yep.
Yep.
After we pick up those two, we head on back to London?
The hideout, wherever.
Wherever that... It was a European city of some sort.
Paris.
I bet it was... Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was Paris.
That's right. It was European. Because they end up going to Australia.
Yeah, they end up going to Australia to hook the flight back to L.A.
Right.
This is where Ellen Page jumps into Leonardo DiCaprio's dream, and Leonardo DiCaprio is dreaming of him and Mal in a hotel room.
Right.
She shows up, walks out, and then Mal freaks out. She jumps back into this elevator, and then Leonardo DiCaprio is there, and he's like, hey, what are you doing here? This is not the place for you.
Right.
So then they take this elevator ride through his memories, and whoop, up and down.
And we learn what's been pretty obvious. I mean,
yes.
It's been really projected and foreshadowed. No surprise here that Mal is his wife. She's dead.
Mm-hmm.
He's projecting her, and he feels responsible for her death. Not only that, but we also find out he's been blamed for her death. That's why he can't go back to the United States where his kids are. And part of the fee that he's going to get from Ken Watanabe is that he's going to be able to clear his name. So that's why this last job is so important to him. He can clear his name and go be with his kids again.
This is also the point in the dreams where they establish the tokens.
They explain the tokens.
They
establish the tokens.
They happen a couple times before, but they don't explain
the totems.
Right, you need some way of telling whether or not you're in the real world or the dream world. And since the physics in the dream world were completely different from the real world, in his case, he uses the little spinning top.
They also establish that, and this is important too, you have to create a totem that's unique for yourself.
Yeah.
And don't let anyone else influence, because they can manipulate your dream
right.
by changing your totem.
Mm-hmm. You need to understand how it feels, how it works,
right.
everything about it.
Yes. In his case, it's the spinning top. If its top continues to spin and never fall over, you're in the dream world. If it eventually stops spinning and falls over, you're in the real world.
And so every
turns
time
out to be a chess piece.
And every time he wakes up, he meticulously goes, finds a flat surface, and spins the top to make sure.
Usually he's alone, too.
Right.
He runs off and does it and then comes back. So the plan is hatched. And we don't really understand much of what the plan is. But they head to Australia. And they all jump on a plane, and they're all sitting in first class with, ta-da, Cillian Murphy.
Right.
Which is the target of their
heist. This was set up because they knew Cillian Murphy's dad
died,
and they're flying him back, and they established before that they need 10 hours. Yeah. They need a span of time that's at least 10 hours to perform the Inception, because they're going to do dreams within dreams within dreams.
Which all have different time levels on each one.
Right. And establishing that, they're planning on the deepest level of the dream being able to take weeks if necessary, based on the exponential growth of dream time.
Time dilation within the dream.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is clever, that I dug that they were doing variable lengths of time dilation. So, they begin the Inception.
Yeah. From here,
this is where the spoilers come.
And this is where we're going to have to be clear about what's happening in which level of the Inception.
I'm going to use level numbers.
That's fine.
Okay.
So, the base level is the real world. First level, zero. That's fine. On the plane, they're at zero.
We'll
jump ahead a little bit just to establish the worlds. On the plane, they're
zero.
Here
there'll be spoilers, too. So right. If you've been listening thus far and don't want to get spoiled,
quit now.
In the van, they're at level one. In the hotel they're at level two. And then in the James Bond...
In the Fortress.
Snowscape.
In Hoth.
Hoth is level three.
Is level three. That said, level zero... Well... Level zero, they're on the plane. They have bought off the flight attendant.
Well, Sato's bought the airline and the flight attendant.
Well, yeah,
so
he's
the
bought
whole
the airline, the flight attendant, and he's slipped a drink.
We'll never be able to buy tickets now. I just bought the airline.
Yeah.
Love it. So, they go into level
the first
one.
The first level of the dream. A rainy Los Angeles day.
Rainy Los Angeles day. One team has...
You go to the bathroom.
One team picks up Cillian Murphy.
Yes.
And they abduct him.
Right.
Essentially. So while they're cruising around, they're attacked by gunmen in random SUVs.
Right.
Which we come to find out means that the target has had Inception defense training.
Right.
Or dream theft
prevention. He says security.
And this is something they didn't know.
This is something
new.
Totally new. And another important factor to note, they can't leave.
Right.
The drugs that they're using prevent them from waking up when they've been killed.
Right. And right. We find out that if you die in this particular instance, you will not come out of the dream. You will descend deeper into an area where you may not ever escape from.
Right.
Which they refer to as limbo.
Yeah. So you go deeper. And what we also established before this that's important is that Ellen Page has wanted Leo to tell the group what's going on with
Mal.
Because so is Tommy.
Yeah.
Separate.
Yeah, but Tommy doesn't know just how bad it is.
But he knows something is up.
He knows something's up.
When Mal shows up in the first dream, he's like, dude, WTF.
Yeah, you need to do something about that.
Yeah, you need to stop doing this.
Right. Well, and then, out of nowhere, and this is where they firmly establish that you are in a freaking dream. A freight train is in the middle of a Los Angeles street.
And just plows through.
Yeah. And I thought that effect was awesome.
It was awesome.
Because it was totally unexpected, but it totally entrenches you into, okay, we're not in the real world anymore. We are in a dream. And weird stuff is going to continue to happen from here on out.
Yep.
Don't expect the world to work the way you expect it to. It's going to get crazy from
there. Even they're surprised by it. Weird,
right?
Yeah, there's always, where did that freaking train come from? Oh, it's a part of my subconscious mind. We'll find out later that has an important.
Oh yeah, it's huge.
Yeah. So,
but it's also not the first time that the train has showed up.
Right.
Either in being mentioned or visually, the train has appeared before in the course of the story.
So now their plan is a bit compromised. But
it's a bit compromised because Sato gets shot.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Which was not planned. And he cannot, since he cannot wake up.
He cannot wake up and he cannot die.
Right.
So he's going to feel the pain of being shot in the chest.
And for him, for Leonardo, it's very important because he needs to be able to wake up when this is all said and done, because
he holds the key.
The first thing he's doing is making the call.
Right.
Plus, it's established when they land on the ground. If this hasn't worked, he's going to jail.
Yep.
Possibly for the rest of his life. So for him, all the cards are on the table.
So they take Cillian Murphy to this warehouse. Aramis does his impression of Tom Berenger.
Yes.
Which is family friend, confidant, whatever. They're trying to get information out of him. This is another prisoner. This is clever. They plant the idea of a safe in his mind at the top level, and then lead him to the combination they give him.
Yes.
At the top level. And their objective is to get him to open the door at the third level, so that he realizes
and those numbers truth. And those numbers keep recurring throughout the whole dream.
Yep. Right.
Subtle manipulation of him, which is, they don't talk about it, but it's clever.
Yes.
They actually do two inceptions.
Mm-hmm.
One, he's pretty aware that they've done it to him.
Right.
He knows.
And they're playing that he knows. He knows the first level, he's fully aware that he is being incepted.
Yeah.
Well, he's in a dream.
Right.
He does not know that in the first level.
Well, he begins to... Let's put it this way. He begins to...
His defenses are active.
His defenses are active.
Like, at the first level, his defenses are active.
Him in the dream world is not conscious that they are in a dream.
Right.
He believes that is reality. That he has been abducted, Tom Berenger has been abducted, and they're being tortured to get at whatever is in this safe.
No, to be open the safe.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. So, at this point, they all climb into a van. They take him down to level 2, but somebody has to stay on level 1 to drive him around.
Well, and they establish that each person is responsible for the dream world that they're in. So the first dream world has been created by Yusef.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because he's the one that is then driving the van. The second world is created by the Tommy character, the character that's from 30 Rock. Third Rock.
It's Arthur.
Arthur, thank you.
Yeah, Arthur. And it's the hotel.
It's the hotel, yes.
It's the hotel. Cillian Murphy is there, and Cobb tries a maneuver where he tells him that this is a dream. Someone is trying to steal from you. I'm here to protect you.
This is another place where the numbers show up, because the first time we see Cillian Murphy, he's with a chick.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out the chick is the forger again. Has slipped him a phone number.
Mm.
And when Cobb comes up to him and says, hey, you know, you're being played here. We're in a dream. Don't you remember me? You created me. Don't you remember?
Yeah.
And
it's just another inception.
I'm another part of your security force.
I'm your security force. I'm your inside your dream security force. And he's like, how, you know, that's not true. What's going on? And he's like, look at the phone number. The phone number. And I don't know if they actually mention the phone number, but he says it's only 6 digits. And the number of the combination that he got fed in the first one was only 6 digits.
Yep. That wasn't the only evidence. In the van, as the van is driving around, it's being chased and shot. So they are tilting. Yes. The van is tilting, and so the world itself is tilting.
It's vibrating and tilting.
The windows have been shot out, so they are spraying water in. And so as the water kind of splashes on their faces, you see just torrential waves on the outside.
Right.
So he convinces Cillian Murphy that this is a dream, somebody is trying to rob you.
Yes.
As he gets more forceful with it, the projections start to take note and start looking at him.
Right.
So they
kind of with murderous intent.
So they kind of sneak out of the room, head up to a hotel room where,
and he's actually at this point he's actually using the projections against him.
Yeah,
because the projections are after Leonardo, but he's telling him they're after you.
Yeah,
all these forces of evil are coming after you, which is kind of brilliant.
Which is awesome.
The two hotel rooms, the numbers of the two hotel rooms. Are the 6-digit combination?
Yep.
Another part of the world where the physics, where by being the architect, you can control the physics of the world and the layout of the world. He makes it so that the numbers were like 528 and 491 or something like that. But he makes it such that room 491 is directly below 528, which in no hotel would ever be the case.
Well, also, when he's fighting the projections in the stairwell, he runs down, runs up, comes up behind him, pushes the guy, and there's no stairs.
Yeah, he creates a paradox within the stairwell, which they actually established that
as a primrose stairs. It's the ones that, you just keep walking around and around and around.
Right, and they actually established that with Ellen Page, that she needs to learn physics paradox, or paradoxical physics, so that she can use that to help create a world that appears bigger than it is, so that no one ever pushes the boundaries of your world. Because if even the projections start pushing the boundaries of your world, they'll realize that it's a false world, and the subconscious will be notified, and it will all start collapsing.
Yeah. So the they convince Cillian Murphy to go one level deeper to protect whatever this other company, this other group is trying to steal, this fictional group is trying to steal. Tommy, Arthur, stays awake as the architect of the second level.
Right.
To kind of keep an eye on things and to initiate the drop at the specified time.
Correct.
So.
And this is where they go into the.
This is where they go to Hoth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Snow Fortress. Hoth.
Which, that sequence, again, kind of harkened back to a James Bond kind of, especially some of the action sequences in that. They were very over-the-top James Bond, skiing down the side of the mountain with machine guns, then flipping yourself around, skiing down the mountain backwards, shooting your machine gun. I mean, just crazy tricks.
By an impossible number of soldiers after you.
Yes.
Yeah. And the projections are fully aware of what's going on.
And they're fully armed. And
fully armed.
Trained. And these are like uber projections.
Yeah. Apparently the deeper you go, the harder it is to fool the projections. Apparently.
That's reasonable. Fair.
Sure. They end up breaking into this installation. Sato is pretty much done for and falls over dead once they get in.
And worse comes to worse, so does Fisher.
Yes.
Yes, he gets shot. He's killed dead.
Right.
And Aramis shoots Mal in the head, because Mal is the one who ends up shooting Cillian Murphy.
Right. He doesn't react fast enough to prevent her from killing Fisher. And now he's down in limbo, and Sato's down in limbo, and Mal's down in limbo. So now we've got the whole biggest problem is we've got to get two of them back up to this level so they can complete their mission.
And Dom has also come to the realization that he has to face Mal, and something has to be done.
Something has to be done while all of this happens.
And it all has to be synchronized to the exact same kick.
On level one, the van has stopped on a drawbridge. It is going to back off.
This is where time gets crazy.
This is where time gets crazy. Awesome. And it's really awesome because the van backs off.
Yeah.
And there is another 45 minutes of the movie where it is just the van falling on level one.
Right.
So level one, the van is falling.
It's over the edge of the bridge and just falling.
Level two, Tommy has to figure out a way, since they're falling in level one, level two has lost gravity.
Yes.
Tommy has to find a way to drop them in no gravity.
Right. To give them the kick in no gravity.
To give them the kick they need.
Because
I don't understand.
Because the original plan was to use explosives to
drop the
floor.
Elevator.
To drop
the floor.
And just have the whole room just drop. Because if the whole room drops and they're all sitting in the room, they get that sensation.
Mm-hmm. What I don't understand is why level three has gravity.
Yeah, I know.
I think that's an oversight.
Maybe. Or is it because
time dilation, again, effect is not there?
No, because
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Because then they would lose gravity at some point as soon as the van went over. And they would lose gravity longer there than anywhere else.
Yeah,
I can accept the argument that inside of the dream, Tommy could project that he had himself gravity.
Right.
But he doesn't, which is the problem in level two. I think it's an error.
Potentially, yeah.
Potentially,
yeah, that was one of those things that by that point, I was so far in.
It didn't
even question it. I didn't question it while I was watching the movie. I questioned it after.
Right.
I didn't care what I was watching.
Cillian Murphy is down. Cobb and Ellen Page go down to Limbo.
Yes.
To get him and to get Sato.
Right. It's a new level. It's a new level that Dom has created.
It's a new level that Dom has created. Dom has been here before.
But Dom can't create, so Dom has to use something that was there before.
Dom can't create.
Yes, Dom doesn't. No.
He can. He just doesn't want to.
He just doesn't want to.
He's manipulated by Mal, so he doesn't think he can. He doesn't want to. He doesn't want to because Mal will
pop forth. And
Mal will show up and wreck things.
Will infect his dreams. She has infected his dreams, basically.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool. So, this is where he walks through Limbo, and he explains Limbo to Ellen Page.
Mm-hmm.
And he, as he's walking through, and he's like, yeah, we went down to Limbo, and we spent
50 years there.
If anybody's listening at this point, and they haven't figured it out, from here on out, spoilers!
Yeah.
This is where it gets important.
This is where we can't help but spoil the movie at this point.
Limbo is, he and Mal spent 50 years in Limbo.
Yes.
Eventually, he realized that they'd been here too long, and they needed to leave.
Right.
But she would not leave. This is where he planted... Well, no. She was convinced that the real world was the dream, and that Limbo was the real world.
Yes.
So he planted... This is where he does the first inception, and the first inception he does is that this is a dream.
Yes.
This is a dream, and you need to wake up. And he does that by taking the top, spinning the top, and making it stay up.
Right.
That was the idea that he planted.
And see, and I don't know if he was invert. I don't know if it was inverting that he meant to incept her. It felt like that was just a consequence of it, because of what eventually happened.
Right, he didn't intend for that to happen.
Right,
because he
did it.
He intended for them. He did not understand the extent of what he was doing.
Yeah, he didn't understand that he was going to affect her subconscious at the
across
next level.
The board.
Yeah, at every level from here up.
Right,
he knew that he was getting her out of this world. He didn't realize that he was actually breaking her subconscious on the levels
so
above
levels.
This.
Right,
because they were. Multiple levels in. They established right. that they were multiple levels in the dream at that point.
Right. So,
well, after we get the explanation of what this is all about, we finally have a confrontation with Mal. And Mal unloads on everybody about why they're there and why he can't leave, because she essentially has guilted him into trying to get her to stay with her, because one of the reoccurring themes is they were to grow old together, and
right.
and Mal apparently didn't.
Spoiler: this is where one of the big spoilers comes in. Mal's totem was the top.
Yep.
That was one of the. I mean. It was pretty obvious what had been happening from the beginning, because I've seen movies before.
Mal's totem was the top. The thing about it is, this is the thing about it. The top does not exist on any level that is not a dream.
Right.
That he creates the top in Limbo.
Yes.
And by virtue of the fact that he has the top everywhere else, even on level zero, that means that he has to still be in a dream.
Yes.
Because the physical object just does not magically appear when he wakes up in his hand. Because that's not how it works.
Arguably, you can argue the point that at any point he could have gone to her body and taken the physical object at the top.
Why would she have a top on her?
That was her totem.
That was her totem. Okay. That's I can accept that.
Because they established that was Mal's totem. That was what he needed. That was hidden in her safe. That was what she used to reject the fact she by hiding it from herself in her safe in the deepest level of the dream, she was hiding from herself that they were in a dream.
I can accept that. I don't agree with it. but I can accept that.
Right. And at any point, he could have gone through her body at the next highest level and taken the totem from her.
Right.
Which is how he finds the totem. He goes to her secret place and finds the totem and shows it to her and says, look, we're in a dream.
I can accept that. What I cannot accept is that at level zero, when she dies, he gets the top.
It would have been in her possession.
Yeah, well, her possession was splattered all over the ground 15 stories down.
A metal top wouldn't have been.
It is implied...
That he ran.
That he ran.
Right.
There wasn't much seeing if she was okay to do.
Yeah, but even when he ran, he went back to...
His house to get plane tickets and say where the kids or whatever. So,
right. We also never see the kids.
Chibi's ring. Never see the faces, yeah.
On level zero and nowhere else, he wears his wedding ring.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so back to Limbo. He goes to the for some reason, his house is now the penthouse of a skyscraper, but it's Limbo, so we don't really question it.
Well, and that's what he said. He said we created where we wanted to live. Here are all the places we used to live. This is where we want to live. So we created it.
Yep.
We created everything in this world. We had 50 years. We created the world.
Yeah, we had a lot of time.
Yeah.
So they go there. Mal shows up. She's crazy. He pushes Cillian Murphy and Ellen Page off of the tower. By doing so, kicks both of them back up to level 3.
Yes. And tells them, he tells them, well, Mal is still there talking to him, and Ellen Page is convinced that he's just going to hang out with Mal.
Yep.
She's convinced that Mal has got finally you got in it. Her hooks,
mm-hmm. Yep.
And you're just going to stay. F you. I'm out.
I thought he pushed her off.
No, she jumped.
She jumped.
Oh.
So, but he tells her, no, I'm okay, and somebody still has to get Sato.
Yep.
He had to go find him.
Right.
So, he stabs Mal.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Kills her dead.
He does kill her dead. Then he washes up on a beach.
Yes.
Then he gets Sato.
Yes.
And Sato is in. And old.
Which I thought was really cool because it played to the time dilation.
Yeah.
Right. Because and he's still young. Sato's old.
Yes.
I thought that was very cool.
And if all this is going on, we see the various
because
sections of how they're trying Sato to get the kicks.
Died all synchronized before they went under.
Not very much longer, though.
Yeah.
But Sato would have spent more time in the world than he did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A lot more time.
Right.
Because it's full-on minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Which we've already established increases the time dilation, whatever.
Right.
So, he wakes Sato up. He also wakes up, and they hit level 3 right as the level 3 kick starts, which is synchronized with the level 2 kick.
I like the level 2 kick.
With the elevator?
With the elevator.
That was
I thought that was great. And that was the part I was talking about with the special effects, where he's basically floating through the hotel.
Right.
Doing zero-G combat.
Yeah, and trying to fend off all
wrapping them up in the phone wire to float them down to the
elevator.
The elevator.
And then he's modifying the elevator so that the explosives will provide the upward kick to them.
I thought that was great. And I could, as soon as he started doing it, started pushing them through the hall, it was like, I know what he's doing. This is awesome.
Yeah. Which was clever.
Yeah.
I dug. And then level 1 kick, which was the fall. The
van.
There is no level 0 kick, which is weird, because I thought they had to have a kick at every previous level to wake them up.
Well, that's,
I guess the combined kick of all 3 levels.
Right. Wakes them all up.
Right.
Although it doesn't work for Yusef and Arthur.
Except for that.
There's the timing.
Well, this is where I'll tell you at the end what happened. Okay. There's a reason for that.
Or is it
because
is it because the plane is coming down?
No, it's not that.
The depressurization of the plane.
No, it's not that.
Okay.
I'll tell you when we get to the very end.
Okay, all right. They wake up.
Yeah.
And they wake up, Cillian Murphy's like, ooh! And then doesn't say anything, but he looks thoughtful.
Yeah.
Then they leave the plane. Everybody gives themselves congratulations.
Well, like, well, they all wake up. Then
Sato
wakes up. Sato wakes up. Sato reaches over and grabs the telephone.
Yeah. They all look at each other. Their celebration scene looks. Michael Caine shows up, which is the single best argument that the end sequence is not a dream, by the way, because Michael Caine does not exist in the dream world. Michael Caine exists outside of reality.
Okay.
All right.
He's like a bronze statue.
Anyway, so we see Cobb meet up with his kids. We see the kids' faces. Everything seems to be working fine. But right before he goes out, he spins the top and walks away. The top keeps spinning.
Yeah, that was gay.
The top keeps spinning but falters.
Well, it looks like it's faltering, but we never really see...
The last three frames is it wobbling.
Fade to black.
Yeah, which is it's fucking gay.
Well,
it's the same thing
I was
with the
idea that
he finish was, your movie.
It was done.
No. I understand why he did it that way.
This is the moment you wanted to come back to.
Yeah, this is the moment I wanted to come back to because God damn it.
I love the ending.
Except so lame.
The thing is, no, it makes perfect sense. Because the thing is, Cobb is still in a dream.
Cobb is not in a dream.
He is in a dream.
Is in a dream.
He's not
he's
in, a dream.
In the dream.
He is in the dream. He's not in a dream. He woke up on the plane.
No, he woke up in the dream that he was supposed to wake up in.
Level zero is not the real world. He's still in a dream.
The question is, whose dream is it?
It's his.
No, it's not his. It's Yusef's.
What?
Yes.
What?
That doesn't make any sense.
Yusef was the chemist. He controlled all the sedations. He was what he was trying to do was trying to get Cobb to resolve this problem with Mal because she kept screwing up all the missions. So he's leaving him in the last level where everything is resolved and family life has been restored.
How is this Yusef's dream then?
Because he was where did he get off? The thing is, he's the only person who could stay awake.
What?
Huh? Somebody has to be at that top level. He's the guy. He's the only one who can control. The
I know,
chemical.
But he's in levels. He's in level zero and level one.
Yes,
he can't be in simultaneously awake and not awake. Can't do that. Yusef drives the car.
Yes.
Oh, so he can't be awake.
And he's the only one that feels the full impact. The others are all asleep. So he pops up to the next. As soon as the van hits the water, he wakes up on the plane.
Okay,
along with all the others.
But the plane is still a dream world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's...
He's still a dream world.
That's
and
fine.
It's Cobb's dream.
That's yeah. fine, but the person who's...
It's...
The person
it's
who is
dream.
Architecting the dream cannot go into the next level. Which is why Arthur had to stay awake and Yusef had to stay awake. So, assuming that's what happens, there has to be a fourth party at level zero.
Right. And there's so still the one controlling the dream for a Cobb.
Okay.
Cobb's in the dream world. His world is being manipulated.
The simplest answer to that is that it's Mal's world. And since Mal is gone, there's no way out.
You're no way out. Booyah!
What?
I don't know.
Well, this is a movie you have to watch a whole bunch of times
to keep
track
so.
Of
I don't
all
think
the
so.
Levels.
No, that's not true. That's not true because I kept fine track of everything as it progressed.
Yeah.
Now, there were clues, either they were mistakes in filmmaking, or there were cues very early on that everything established in Level Zero was a dream.
I don't disagree.
Because, especially, and the thing that I noticed right off, there's the scene where Dom is talking to Sato, and Sato's in the helicopter,
mm-hmm.
and Dom is outside the helicopter. And when Dom is looking at Sato, there is rain smacking against the side of that helicopter. I mean, water is flowing down the glass. Rain is actively hitting it. When they show Dom...
It's dry.
It's dry. There's no rain coming down at all. That could be a mistake in filmmaking.
This guy right here is right. Level Zero is the real world. It feels like a nightmare because Cobb isn't used to it. The nightmare imagery is just imagery. He spent more of his life in dreams than not. He's uncomfortable being there. Because he doesn't have the control. I agree with that.
I don't think so. I think
it's I do not think he's in a dream.
I think he's in a dream.
I think he's in a dream, too.
I think he's in a dream, and now that I think about it, I think he's in Mal's dream.
I don't see how that makes sense with the rules that they laid out.
Then why would he...
He never broke out of Mal's dream when Mal died. When Mal died.
Okay.
When she quit. When she said, this is not the real world, and jumped. She moved on.
Right.
She ascended. Mm-hmm. And he stayed in her dream.
He couldn't have. The dream would have fallen apart. They established that several times, that when the person who's creating the dream dies or somehow is removed from the picture, the dream falls apart.
Unless he cracked and was in the dream. He was in limbo.
They were in limbo, then they left limbo.
Well, this is where everybody's going to be.
Because then their rules were broken. Then their rules were broken to begin with. Because if they were that deep in the dreams that he was there, they would have had to need at least a third party to get that far.
They would need a fifth party to get that far. They used drugs. They used, I want to say heroin.
Maybe. Which could be why he's still in the dream.
That's potential.
So she kicked. She kicked by dying.
Or she just died.
Or she just died. I think she kicked by dying. And then he's still in the dream world. Plus, the fractured nature of all the scenery and the cuts of how the story flowed, there were really odd cuts throughout.
Oh, yeah.
They did the same... It was the same kind of thing in the way that Shutter Island was cut. Mm. Where there were just gaps in time, awkward gaps in time with no transition.
Yeah.
With no expected transitions.
I don't like movie endings like this.
I like movie endings like this.
I don't like movie endings where, well, either thing is equally valid. Ugh. Great. So you couldn't make a decision. Fantastic.
See, I don't think that's the case. I think that it's the same argument we had with the wrestler last week.
Right, where you just fill in what you want to believe.
Based on what we were shown in the film.
Okay. So, essentially, I have to finish the story for you. Well, what the hell am I reading your story for? It's not your story, then. It's my story. Great. I don't want that. I want to be entertained. I don't want to debate afterwards.
Well, that's what makes a great movie, the ones that cause people to talk about them for years and years and years on the interpretation. I mean, look how many people have watched 2001 and come up with a different interpretation.
I've never seen 2001.
Each time.
I'll accept Taxi Driver.
Taxi Driver's a good example.
Yeah, I know. Remember I didn't like Taxi Driver?
Fight Club's a good example, too.
I don't see how Fight Club is not clear.
I still posit that, what's her name? Might have been another fragment of his personality.
And I would argue that is a fine theory, which you can prove and disprove, but has no overall impact on the story. Because at the end of the story is still done.
Yeah.
Because the conflict is between Edward Norton and Brad Pitt.
And these stories are still done in the end. Both stories have ended.
I don't see how that's
the
done.
The story is ended.
He's not awake. Or he is awake.
The same. The ending of Shutter Island begs the same question. You're left with the question: was it real or wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was he aware? Was he aware or was he crazy?
Okay.
Was he awake or was he asleep? Does it matter?
It was a great film.
Does it matter? Does him being awake or asleep matter? Is the question.
It matters to me.
To him, to the character, does it matter?
But he's not viewing the movie. I'm viewing the movie.
It's his reality, though.
That may be his reality, but I am the one watching it and reviewing it now. He's not here to argue with me.
Are we?
If you can get him here to argue about this, I'm all in.
I'm going
to
call him.
You call him right now. I'll fall asleep.
Damn phone.
Go to sleep. I'm going to call him in my sleep world.
Chris, get your ass over here.
Yeah,
Chris Nolan, get your ass over here.
Explain the last 5 minutes of the movie.
God, I love you, Jimmy. Chibi, you're gonna kill me.
Chibi's wrong. All right. So Chibi wants to me to read his analysis. Where does that start?
Oh, my God. War and Peace, Chibi. What's happening here?
Okay.
Scroll up just a little bit more.
I don't want to read all this.
All right. Start at 10:58 there.
All right. And at the end, when the top spins faster and faster, about to spin out, it's a metaphor for the moment. His dream, so to speak, has come true. Then Stingray blathers on. it's a moment where, for a split second, the dream world and the real world cross over. Just for a moment, it energizes, it pulses.
I'm pulsing right now.
I thought it said it pubes before as I scrolled through, but it's the user and then probably, and then the real world comes back in. Then he says that whatever Stingray is saying is crap. The movie only works if he's in the real world. I disagree with that.
I totally agree with that.
Then he starts swearing at me and calling me names.
Because
completely invalidating his argument.
No, it's all true.
It must be said that one of the best interpretations of Inception, that it's a metaphor for creation of a film. Cobb is the director. Chris Nolan, in specific, his team, his crew, the dream. His movie, the projections, the audience. So Cobb wants to make a movie about going home to his kids. To do that, he goes to his producer, Sato, for the capital and to assemble his crew. He gets his production designer, Ariadne, which is a crazy name. The writer, Arthur, actor, Ames, the cinematographer, Youssef. They set up the shop at Fisher Studios, and after researching and good Christ, Chibi, why aren't you just on here? You see, when you're shooting a film, you have to be aware of how your audience is perceiving it. And as the director, you have total control of the world, but if you let things get too out of hand, too weird, the audience loses their suspension of disbelief.
Going home!
Good Lord.
Then you win an Academy Award.
Blah, blah, blah. All right.
All right, so Chibi typed a lot.
Chibi typed a lot, and I just read it. You're welcome.
All right. So, I think our ultimate conclusion here is that I'm Batman.
Nolan's Batman.
No, I'm Batman.
No, Batman was made by Nolan.
Nolan can be Cillian Murphy.
Scarecrow. Infecting your dreams.
Oh, look at that.
Whoa! Your nightmares.
I like it. The Inception to spend 10:50.
Okay, so we agree to disagree.
Sure.
You don't agree to disagree.
I agree to disagree.
Because you're just wrong.
That's fine. You can agree to disagree because you know your point is dumb. I don't agree.
I don't think my point is dumb.
I don't need to agree to disagree because I know I'm right.
I think the world that they lived in was a dream.
Oh, I was talking about the crappy endings thing.
Oh.
I like a nice direct story that starts, middles, and ends.
That ended.
Yeah, but we're arguing about how it ended.
So what?
So how did it end then? You have your interpretation.
He was happy.
Ugh.
He returned to his children as he wanted to do. Whether it was in
were
the
they really his children?
Does it matter to him? Does
matters
it matter to the
me.
Character?
Matters to me. It matters to God. Therefore, we are righteous.
You are wrong.
I have been waiting. Okay, so here's the deal. You ever seen the movie The Seventh Sign? Demi
Moore.
It's
been a long time.
So there's one line in the goddamn movie where they're talking to the guy that they're going to put to death on death row, and they're like, well, that's not the law, or it doesn't matter to the law or something. It matters to God! And he points at the sky. And I quote that all the time. And no one ever remembers or gets it. I quote that to Demolina nonstop. I don't know where we go to. It doesn't matter. It matters to God! Nothing. And I'm like, son of a bitch. We have to watch this movie. Maybe she'll get it. She probably won't. But that's going to piss me off more. That's why we haven't watched the movie.
All right. So one of the trailers I saw in front of Inception was for The Town. Did you see that? Mm-hmm. Okay, Ben Affleck movie, and it's the premise appears to be that there is a quarter mile or so many so big area within Boston. Where the most bank robberies have taken place.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And a bank robbery takes place. There's someone who's kidnapped. She's taken hostage as part of this bank robbery to help them escape. After the fact, she meets Ben Affleck, who is...
One of the crew.
It ends up being that he's one of the crew. Well, they're also being followed by an FBI agent who's questioning her... Because she's the only one that spent any time with them, and they're supposedly this uber notorious crew of bank robbers.
It's the Two Live crew.
Possibly. The thing that I thought was funny about it was the way they advertised the movie was brought to you by the director of Gone Baby Gone.
Who's the director of Gone Baby Gone?
Ben Affleck.
Oh.
They didn't want to come out and say directed by Ben Affleck.
Acted by Ben Affleck.
He's an actor in the film.
I hate Ben Affleck.
I like Gone Baby Gone.
That movie's okay.
You're okay.
There were some awesome moments in that movie.
That movie was great.
There were some awesome moments
in that movie. We had a great discussion about that movie.
I remember it clearly, as though it was 2 years ago.
This movie looks good. I'm just saying.
I will likely not see it because I hate Ben Affleck.
I'll make it something we have to see for this, so you will see it.
You want to play this game?
Last final post-production notes about Inception.
Start putting anime on there, because I know you don't like anime.
I've not seen any anime. I've not seen much anime that has appealed to me. I haven't seen a whole lot of anime, though, either.
Final post-production notes on Inception. Christopher Nolan took 10 years to write this story. He started it in 2000 and did not feel that it was ready at that time, and held off on it until after he produced several films. One of them, of course, being Batman, the Batman movies.
He couldn't have made this movie until he made some of the other movies that he made.
With the
he
didn't have the chops.
Of Batman Begins and Dark Knight Returns, that guy has a
blank check. Yeah. He really does.
That guy can do whatever he wants now. And Memento. I mean, Memento is great, too.
This movie is a precursor to the type of storytelling from Memento.
Even though it predates Memento by several years, yes.
Yeah, but just some of the concepts of...
It's alternative storytelling.
It is.
It's something that is innovative.
But you're right. It is very linear. There is no point in this that isn't...
Non-linear.
With the exception of learning stuff through dreams that appear as flashbacks, but those dreams still take place in linear order. But even the flashbacks are linear.
The story is completely linear to Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yes.
There is never a moment where there is a flashback.
No. We're just playing a dream. We're just in a dream sequence.
Which is bitchin'.
Yep.
I appreciate the fact that a director can make a movie without starting. Well, that's not true. Because the beginning of the movie is towards the end. It's not totally linear.
That's true.
I was going to say, I appreciate the fact that a movie doesn't have to start off.
And that's,
20 days later and then jump back to the beginning.
Most of the time, I hate that. Most of the time, I hate that.
They don't tell you. No. That's the key.
Right.
They didn't tell me that was what was happening.
Yes.
Like at... it's the George Clooney movie that won.
Michael Clayton. Yep.
That didn't win, did it?
It didn't win, but it was...
It was nominated.
It was nominated. It was one of those movies that we talked about.
That was the year with No Country for Old Men.
Right.
Yeah, that was the year that won.
There is also some other details.
It only took him 3 seconds for him to write, but he was in limbo.
What are the details you got over there?
Well, one other thing, that long fight sequence they had in the hotel hallway.
Yeah.
That was a practical effect. They actually made a hotel hallway that was about 100 meters long, and they put it inside of a rotating bearing so they could turn the thing.
Well, I got that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could tell that when they were walking on the walls and stuff. That's not what I'm talking about. When he's floating through the hallway.
That has to be wires.
I'm thinking that was either wire work or that was
drop work,
airdrop. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine, especially the length of time that sequence took place, that was drop.
It can't be drop. It's too long.
It's yeah. That had to
only
be
like
wire.
6 or 7 seconds or something ridiculous like that.
But this movie has very few CGI effects in it. I think I read somewhere where Batman Begins had about 650. This one only had about 500 effects.
I can't even remember.
Still a lot.
Still a lot, but it's a lot less than most other movies. Do use.
10 years ago, that would be a huge number.
Right. Yeah. By now, today's standards, yes, that is a small number.
The new Star Wars movies were
all CGI.
Yeah, it's like, if you look at the percentages, 100.
And there's whole sequences in those movies that are CGI.
Yeah. The majority of this movie, I mean, maybe some touch-up stuff, but...
Yeah, I mean, some of the outside physics stuff,
yeah.
I can't imagine that was practical.
Kind of impractical. No, they bent a city block.
Yeah,
that was a CGI effect.
Yeah,
but the
cars driving through tunnels that are actually in the ground—that was some pretty cool.
But
effects.
The train effect was the real was real.
I believe that.
Right. Yeah, they took a truck.
It looked real.
They took a truck and put the train panels on it and drove it right down the center of the street.
I loved how in the aftermath the asphalt was destroyed.
Yeah, it was a jet. Yeah, it had the two rail grooves where the
tracks
wheels
would have been. Yeah,
yep. Where the tracks would have been.
I dug when they put their heads on the track.
Yeah,
the train to fucking crush them. That was awesome.
And how that I'll call back the number of train reference, because there were a number of references.
They start off on a train.
Hmm.
All right, that's all I got on this.
Let's wrap it up. Thanks for coming.
I always wrap it up, Daryl.
I was just thinking of something that I don't even remember what it is now.
Sausage Fest.
Sausage Fest.
Sausage Fest. That's so ridiculous.
All right.
That's so utterly ridiculous.
Next week, Men Who Stare at Goats. At Archon Sausage Fest.
Be there.
Nobody in that chat room is going to go out.
No.